The following is a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting. It's time for To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital. A weekly visit with the healthcare professionals at Rush Memorial to introduce you to the employees and the various programs at the hospital. And now, your host, Mary Frances Friedel.
Good morning. We're here today with Summer Lessard, the Director of Surgery at Rush Memorial Hospital. Thank you so much for coming today, Summer.
Thanks for having me. What a wonderful morning.
You are here today to talk to us about sepsis, but first, I'm sure our listeners would like to know a little bit more about you and your background and how you came to Rush Memorial.
I am a registered nurse. I've been a nurse for 21 years. When I started in nursing, I started in the trauma ICU in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So I worked in the trauma ICU for about 3 years. We, of course, dealt with trauma surgery patients. We dealt with a lot of really sick patients. This was in a level one trauma center, which all that means is that's the highest level of care that you can give to trauma patients in the community. After I did the trauma ICU, I became a trauma nurse specialist, also called a critical care nurse clinician. A trauma nurse specialist had many different facets. So on one part, I took care of all the level one, level two traumas. And the second part of that was the critical care nurse clinician. I took care of all rapid response and code patients within this practice that I did for about 7 years in Chattanooga. We would do intubations. We would respond to rapid response. So that means that if somebody became septic, we would respond to those patients, evaluate the situation, help initiate sepsis guidelines. If somebody came in with a STEMI, we would respond to those and help, you know, the patient get the medications that they need to get transferred. STEMI is just another word for a heart attack. If you were having a stroke, we would respond to those patients. So essentially, we took care of all the critical care needs within the hospital. It was a separate team, and we did have advanced training. So we did intubation, we did ART lines, we did central line, stuff like that. And the other piece of that was creating these protocols to take care of these sick patients and then, of course, take care of surgery patients as well. Within that, I also have a lot of experience with education. I teach advanced cardiac life support for adults. I teach pediatric advanced life support. Of course, that's for pediatrics, for children. I teach a basic life support. I directed a trauma course for years called Advanced Trauma Care for Nurses. After that, I married my husband and we moved to Cleveland, Ohio. And up there, I worked in their level one ER up there for a few years. And within that, you would also respond to sepsis patients, heart attack patients, stroke patients. Once again, the highest level of trauma care that you would get in the community. Then we decided to move to Rushville, my husband and I. So when we first moved here, I started off doing education. I just found that I loved the hospital. I'd never been in a small hospital like Rushville, but the community, just the work ethic, the support, I found it pretty amazing moving from a big hospital, even two hospitals that I really felt that I loved, coming to Rush Memorial. It's a real jewel. So I did education. I actually, after that, helped develop the knee and hip replacement program. And then I kind of moved over into surgery. Obviously, I had a lot of experience with surgery patients, with processes, with leadership. And I just kind of fell right into that position. And I find that I love it. And we have been expanding our surgery program. It's been really amazing. We've doubled our surgery load since I've been there. And I've got an amazing group of nurses that we've hired in. So it's just been a wonderful experience, and I really love the hospital.
Well, we love having you, and I know that we feel very fortunate to have you because it's always great when we can get someone who has your level of experience and education. It's a real boon for all of us.
Yeah, so thank you for saying that. Yeah.
Well, and also, you seem to be the perfect person to talk to us about sepsis today.
Sepsis is very interesting. Dealing with sepsis for 20 years, I can say watching the processes of sepsis is something that is kind of unlike any other when it comes to, you know, healthcare problems and problems within the hospital.
What is sepsis exactly?
So that's a great question. A lot of people do not realize that sepsis is not necessarily an infection. It's a response to an infection. So the most common thing that I see, like when I worked in the ICU, that was kind of my first exposure to sepsis. And the most common problem that we would see in the ICU would probably be respiratory infection. We had a lot of ventilator-associated pneumonia. And so what happens is you get this infection, and then your body has an overwhelming response to infection. So sometimes the easiest way to think about this is if you get hit on the arm and you start to have a bruise, you start to have swelling, you start to have your blood vessels get bigger, you send a lot of blood to the area, you get the bruising. So if you can think about sepsis being an all-over reaction in your vessels and your heart and your organs of this same vasodilation, which just means that, you know, the vessels get bigger, the heart gets bigger, that big reaction causes a lot of problems. Your blood pressure drops. It makes your heart rate go up. If you don't get good blood flow to your body, you get a lot of acid buildup in your system, which can further drop your blood pressure. So long story short, you get really sick.
So are there different stages to sepsis?
Yes, there are three main stages that we talk about and that the Center for Medicaid and Medicare kind of outlines when we're talking about our core measures within the hospital. I'll explain a little bit more about that here in a minute, but there is sepsis, severe sepsis, and septic shock. So the difference between those is really when we're looking at hemodynamic parameters. All that means is like how bad your blood pressure is dropping, how high is your heart rate going, what organs are affected. So we do all these labs, and then we look to see, are your liver enzymes elevated? Are your kidney numbers elevated? So those things kind of clue us into how severe the sepsis is.
So this is a lot of numbers then that they're looking at.
It is. It's a lot of numbers, and it kind of can differentiate between just a regular infection and this really bad. So this can be the difference between just a bad infection and just this big body response to that infection.
Okay. So that would be the difference between just having an infection and actually having sepsis.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So sepsis is not an autoimmune response.
It's not necessarily an autoimmune response. It's almost like a big overall response. It's not like you would think of like with RA or something like that necessarily. But once again, that big response to infection releases a lot of chemicals and stuff. Your body releases all these chemicals, and it causes you to have these, you know, your blood vessels to get bigger, your heart to get bigger.
Okay.
And it's not contagious. That's also a big misnomer. Sepsis in itself is not contagious. Once again, it is just a reaction to this infection.
Okay. So how common is sepsis?
So sepsis is actually a lot more common than people realize. Sepsis is one of the number one causes of death globally. It affects 1.7 million Americans a year. In fact, in 2019, 3,500 Hoosiers died from sepsis. The other big thing about sepsis is the cost. It costs us a lot of money. One of the number one costs for hospitalization in the U.S. If you get sepsis in the hospital, it can almost double the cost of your stay. And it's also a big cause for readmission to the hospital.
Why is caring for a sepsis patient so expensive?
You do have to realize with sepsis that it is not just a single infection. So if you get a respiratory infection, if you get a urinary tract infection, you're dealing with one system typically. Sepsis affects the whole body, and it causes you to have to increase your resources to make sure that this patient gets appropriate fluid resuscitation, make sure that this patient gets appropriate lab work. They're typically sicker patients, meaning that they require more higher acuity of care, which all that means is you need more staff to take care of them. Besides that, the lab work and stuff that you have to do with these patients, the treatments, a lot of times because of, you know, the respiratory or the urinary tract problems, they may need more advanced care like ventilation, you know, BiPAP. Once again, we talked about, you know, having to give them fluids, those kind of things.
It sounds like sepsis is a very complicated thing to take care of.
It is a very complicated thing. A lot of these patients will end up in the ICU or with some sort of advanced care because there are so many different factors to consider.
So how dangerous is sepsis?
30% of patients that are diagnosed with severe sepsis don't survive. 80% actually start out of the hospital, which I think is also a big misunderstanding with sepsis. A lot of people, I think of it as something that you get after you're in the hospital, you end up with an infection, but that's not the truth. 80% start outside of the hospital, and a lot of times when we recognize sepsis, when they come to the hospital, it can be very late.
So this is not because people come to the hospital, they get some hospital-borne infection, and then they wind up with sepsis. You're saying that people already had the infection at home, it turned into sepsis, and then they come to the hospital and they get diagnosed, but by that time, they're pretty far along the road with this.
Yes.
So what are the symptoms of sepsis then in the early stages? Because I guess you want people to try and catch this at home. So
yes.
What should people look for?
That's a great question, because sepsis in its early stages, a lot of times people miss. It can be kind of vague. It is a big problem, even when you are talking about treatment within the hospital. You know, we just recently came up with pediatric guidelines because it is really hard to put all those symptoms together and be able to come up with the standardized way to diagnose and treat these patients. So some of the signs of sepsis in its early stages are, you know, higher or lower than normal temperature. If you know that you have a urinary tract infection, or you know that you are having something going on respiratory-wise, it's just really important to be thinking about sepsis. Once you get past the early stage and you start to get into more advanced sepsis, you'll see a mental decline, confusion, and severe pain, discomfort, shortness of breath. All these things are things that just to watch out for at home. If you know that you've got an infection brewing somewhere, or you know that, especially when you talk about elderly or children, you know that they have had some sort of change in their mental state. So one of the first things that we notice with elderly is they might get confused. They might start forgetting something. You know something is kind of off with them. And a lot of times they'll come in and they'll be septic from a urinary tract infection. You know, with kids, they may start to just not act right. They may just start to get tired, and the kid is just really upset with you. You know, kids come to the hospital, they don't want you messing with them. They don't, you know, they get upset. And if they're just not reacting that way, then it worries us and we know that something's going on. So if your child has had a fever, been sick, and they really are just start to get really sleepy, lethargic, and they just don't act right, then that could be sepsis.
What are you seeing then as a nurse in the hospital?
Well, so symptoms of severe sepsis, you know, we do see that in the hospital, but honestly, a lot of that starts at home too. People don't recognize those first early symptoms, or they don't think it's a big deal. And then the next thing that starts to happen is you can get changes in skin color, patches of discolored skin on the body. You don't pee as much. We call that decreased urine output. You get really disoriented, have big changes in your mental status, difficulty breathing. Now, I want you to understand that you can have trouble breathing even if the infection is not in your lungs. Once again, sepsis starts to affect every organ, and your body starts to compensate, and one of the first ways it tries to fix itself is by breathing faster. So people will get short of breath, have difficulty breathing, but they may sound fine. They may not necessarily show signs of having a lung infection. Abnormal heartbeat or extremely fast heartbeat. Chills, extreme weakness. So I actually had a friend that was only 19 and was admitted to the hospital with sepsis. And one of the biggest symptoms that she had was uncontrollable shaking. And she had a sepsis from a urinary tract infection. All those things, especially in the presence, when you know that you think something is going on as far as an infection. You know, the most common things are like skin, lung, urinary tract infection.
And what about the symptoms of septic shock?
So septic shock, this is going to be this last most dangerous stage of shock. Your blood pressure gets really low. You get a really rapid pulse. You get dizzy or lightheaded, lower than normal body temperature, rapid breathing. So let me give you an analogy of what happens in sepsis. So if you think about a pump and a garden hose. Okay, so our vessels and our heart are actually very similar to this. And what happens in sepsis, if you've got a normal size hose, but you double the size of that hose, then you don't have the pressure to push the fluid around in your body. And then if you take that pump and the pump starts not working as well, and then you don't have the fluid to fill the pump, then you really don't have the pressure in your body. So the body tries to fix that by increasing the heart rate. That's why you get the heart rate can go so high. So that's why you can get these weird skin color changes, because the blood is redistributed throughout your body, which just means it's not in normal places because the body, the hoses and the pumps in the body are so out of whack.
How do you treat sepsis?
So one of the first things that is really important in sepsis is going to be recognition of sepsis. Now, all that means is that we have a lot of policies, procedures in place. We have a lot of training that goes on so that especially in the healthcare field, when you come in, those nurses can recognize that you're having sepsis. We even have stuff in the computer that will trigger something for us to go back and look and say, hey, is this person septic? You know, they have infection. Their heart rate was up. So that being said, we talked about CMS also has core measures in place that for treatment. So when you come in, if you meet these sepsis guidelines and we suspect you're in sepsis, the first three things that we're going to do is draw blood and send it off and get a special lab to measure how much acid is in your blood. We're going to take blood cultures because we want to see what kind of infection that you have. That's one of the first things that we do is start to look for exactly where this infection is coming from, and then treat you with antibiotics. So this is going to be different, but we want to get this all done within 3 hours. So we look at this information and we track it, and we want to try to make sure that we meet those goals as much as possible.
Would you say that sepsis is a bigger problem or a smaller problem in small hospitals?
That's a good question, Mary Frances. And, you know, just from experience, you do have to remember that 80% of it starts in the community. But in bigger hospitals, there's a bigger population. There's a bigger population of bacteria-resistant organisms. So I guess if you look at it from that fact, because bacteria-resistant organisms can tend to be harder to treat, so you're going to be more prone to sepsis with those kind of organisms. You know, that is the advantage of being in a small hospital. But as far as sepsis being more common in big hospitals versus small hospitals, like I said, you do have to remember that sepsis mostly starts outside.
Well, I guess it is good. We have a very low record of hospital-borne infections at Rush Memorial, and maybe that's why being a smaller hospital probably contributes to that.
Yeah, so, and it's a good question.
Helps make us a safe place.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming today.
You can listen to past shows of To Your Health. Log on to rushmemorial.com and click on podcasts. Join us again next week for another visit with Rush Memorial Hospital. It's To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital on Hometown Country 94.3 WIFE. The proceeding was a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting.